considering how many times he'd been low on, well, damn near everything, getting it back faster could only help. On his mental stats, his intelligence hadn't gone up at all, but his wisdom had definitely increased. Again, doing stupid stuff and living through it obviously had its perks. He split the points he'd gained there between reasoning and memory, holding back a few just in case, more out of habit than anything else. When he came to magical, there were a lot of points. He put a level into will, but the rest all went into mana. Again, he'd come up short a couple of times now, and he didn't like that much. He was learning that even with his cheats and his shortcuts, casting spells was expensive. No wonder human mages carried wands and other magic items. They could power them at their ease, and then unload it all when they needed it. Coming down to spells, he stopped and looked at them for a minute. He'd been saving up points to use on his father's book, but right now he didn't have it, and wasn't sure he was going to get it back. He could pump some more points into his framework spells, but right now, that wasn't important. He wasn't really a spellcaster. He was an enchanter, after all. And he really needed to get better at enchanting, especially if he was going to build a device to take his place in creating magic items. Oh, he understood the basics. He had his Tarball archive program, and he could play things back, into similar objects, of course. But he really didn't understand all of the little details of his father's work, and he wasn't sure he could build what he needed without a lot more study. Popping out of that spell, he went into his classroom and dug out the book on enchanting. Digging through it, he started looking for those elements that he thought he might need, and flagged the spells he thought might help him for further examination. Checking his watch, it was after 3 now, so leaving his classroom, he opened his eyes again. Still no sign of Roberta. Getting out of the bed was going to be a challenge, with the girls sprawled on it. But he cheated and shifted to his human form. Then, once he got free, he went full lion. A quick check of the apartment showed him that Roberta wasn't there, but Sarah was asleep in her bed. So, carefully opening the door with his paws, he went out and started looking for her. As he'd seen her at the gate twice before, he decided to go there first.
"What are you doing here?"
Roberta asked.
"Looking for you, of course,"
Sean rumbled, and rubbed his head against her belly.
"Well, I'll be done here in a few more hours,"
Roberta said, and ran her fingers through his mane.
"You know, you look good like that."
"Yes, but I look better like this,"
Sean said, and shifting into his hybrid form, he put his arms around her and kissed her.
"Sean, you'll get me in trouble,"
Roberta laughed.
"Why?"
Sean asked and kissed her again.
"Can't you wait? I get off in a few hours."
"No, I can't wait."
Sean mock growled and kissed her again, starting to stroke her body with his hands.
"I'm supposed to be watching the gate."
Sean grinned and, spinning her around, he pressed up against her back, bending her over the short wall in front of her.
"There. Now you can watch the gate,"
he purred, and started to kiss the back of her neck.
"Damn lions,"
Roberta giggled.
"Samson could never take no for an answer either."
McConnell's office.
"So," Roger said to Charles, "do you believe Sam's claim that they were unable to retrieve the book before some sort of explosion went off and destroyed everything?
And David being killed in the attack by Valens himself?"
Charles laughed and shook his head.
"I'm not that gullible, and neither are you."
Roger nodded and sighed.
"It bothers me that Gerald has apparently thrown in with Sam by backing his story."
Charles nodded.
"True. I suppose Sam must have found something to use against him. Gerald never struck me as the type to go out on a limb like this.
Even the mouse can roar, Charles, if it sees a chance to kill the cat."
"So, what do we do about it?"
"If there is anything that Sam is holding over Gerald's head, I would like to know about it.
This way, when the time is right, we can isolate Sam and deal with him.
Why not deal with him now? Charles asked.
I could remove him quietly and effortlessly, I'm sure.
Roger shook his head.
Don't underestimate Sam. You can be sure he's expecting me to move against him now. I doubt he even believes that he fooled us with his story. However, that's not the issue. The issue is we need to secure the book, or at least know where it is so we can secure it, before we kill him. That book is the key, Charles.
Still, I'd rather not give him the opportunity to learn how to use anything in that book against you, Roger. Charles argued. If we wait too long, he may become too strong.
Roger sighed. Charles had a point.
Start taking precautions. We can afford to give him a couple of days to make him think he's gotten away with it. Sooner or later, he'll slip up, I'm sure.
Charles nodded. I've already got someone in his household watching him. But once I know where that book is, I'm going to move, Roger. The last thing we need is Sam subverting more members of the council over to him. With him, Gerald, and David gone, that's three open spots, a full third of the council gone. Unless you're thinking of keeping Gerald, if we can get something on him.
Roger shook his head.
No, Gerald will have to go, once we've dealt with Sam. Preferably something quiet, like a heart attack in his sleep.
You know, Charles gave Roger an evil grin. How about I kill Gerald tonight? It might spook Sam into making a mistake, and any of the others he may have subverted will think he's gotten greedy.
Roger laughed and smiled, shaking his head.
Charles, as always, you are invaluable, my friend.
Yes,
by all means. Let's play this your way.
Charles nodded happily.
Thanks, Roger.
And getting up, he took his leave.
He had been worried that his friend might not see the danger until too late.
Roger's problem was that he liked to let people hang themselves, and with politics and political maneuvering, that was fine. But Charles liked to tie the knot and slip the rope over their heads himself, especially when violence and action were called for. He knew that he could never do Roger's job. Politics were just too far beyond him, and Roger was truly an expert when it came to playing those games. That Roger had done all that he could to win Charles's loyalty showed that even though Roger may not have the skills for the more direct approach to certain problems, he understood how necessary they were. Charles smiled at that. They knew each other well and played to each other's strengths. Charles had gone to great lengths to prove to Roger that his loyalty was total many years ago, and since then the rewards for both of them had been great. Charles might be Roger's tool, but Roger was Charles's meal ticket, and he'd protect him to the end. Sam swore again, but at least he refrained from throwing the book against the wall. Not that he suspected it would hurt it. The book was enchanted, and enchanted rather cunningly. He could see the words on the paper, and he could almost read them, but he couldn't understand them. Not a one. What's more, they changed. They changed constantly. He wondered then if Bernard had done this, or if it had been his son. He suspected the father. A month ago the kid didn't even know what magic was, so he doubted the brat had learned to do something as complicated as this in such a short time. That made him wonder. Had that brat managed to read the book? To unlock any of its secrets? Not taking him alive with the book may have been a mistake. Cracking the spell, protecting it, was going to take some time, and some serious work. Hiding that from Roger wasn't going to be easy.
Mr. Wilston.
Sam looked up at his servant as she came into the room. Unbidden. Say what you will about the animals, but some of their women were rather comely, as well as fun in bed. Sheila was a comely one, all right. Young, too. A fox-lichen he'd purchased from a dealer in England. She was a great deal of fun. He'd already had several offers for her, once he tired of her charms.
What, Sheila? Sam scowled.
She wasn't supposed to come into his study without knocking.
Sir, it's Mr. Hoyce.
What? Is he here? Show him in already,
No, sir.
Sam picked up now that she looked a little distressed.
He's dead.
What?
Sam said, standing, letting the book drop onto his desk.
How? When?
His servant called. She told me they just found him dead in his study. They think it was his heart, sir.
Sam swore, and, stalking around the desk, he went past her and out into the hallway.
Tell my wife I've gone to Gerald's house to investigate this. Tell the staff not to let anyone but family into the house until I've come back.
Grabbing his car keys, Sam quickly made for the garage. He didn't know that Gerald had a bad heart. Him dying suddenly like this could set his plans back a fair bit. Then again, Sam considered right now Gerald was the only one who knew that Sam had the book. With the problems he was having deciphering it, his plans were all set back anyway. But first he needed to get to Gerald's house and check to be sure that it was in fact a heart attack and not something magically induced. If it were the latter, then he'd have to start watching his back very carefully. 2 hours later, and Sam was seated around a table in the back of a small bar not far off the strip. He looked at the other 5 men who were there. All were well-dressed like himself, but not so well-dressed as to stand out.
Was it a heart attack?
James, the one sitting across from him, asked. Sam sighed and nodded.
I checked him over carefully. There wasn't a single trace of magic to be found. Jessica, his wife, told me that he'd been complaining all morning of indigestion and not feeling well. He'd gone into his study to read for a while, and when lunchtime came around, one of his servants found him. He was already cool to the touch.
Damn,
James said.
Yeah.
Robert, who was sitting on Sam's right, agreed.
Damn. Who knew he had a bad heart?
What does this mean for us?
Gary, who was sitting to Sam's left, asked.
It means, Sam grunted, that we hold off for a few more days, if for no other reason than to respect Gerald's passing and let him be buried in peace.
Sam looked at each of them then. They weren't the most powerful in the coven, but each of them was the son of a key figure, and each of them was tired of waiting for their own chance at power, and was more than willing to go against their father's wishes to gain it.
In fact, we may even be able to use this to our advantage. For now we do nothing, but soon. Soon, I promise you,
Sam told them with a grim smile.
Now, I've been gone long enough. I need to attend to my own duties.
And with that, Sam got up and left them.
Well,
James started to rise, but Gary put a hand on his arm, stopping him and looking at the others.
What?
Gary watched to be sure that Sam had in fact left.
I found out something,
Gary whispered in a low voice, causing the other two to lean in closer.
What?
James asked, lowering his voice as well.
Gerald helped Sam get some sort of book. They were supposed to get it for Roger, but once they got it, Sam killed Jameson and kept it for himself. Gerald told me he was worried that Sam might go after him next.
Why would he say that?
Will, who was seated by James, asked.
Because up until Sam killed him, Jameson had been on board with the rest of us. Sam told Gerald that he had proof that Jameson had sold them out, but Gerald never saw it. Gerald was starting to get worried that he might be next, that maybe Sam was only using the rest of us to get power.
And Gerald told you all of this?
James said, looking a little skeptical.
Last night, when I went over there for dinner,
Gary looked at each of them.
I asked the rest of you to come. You should have. Then you would have heard it too.
Still, that's a lot to take in, Robert said.
Yeah. Well, maybe one of us should go check the body. If Sam killed him, then we may very well be next.
Gary watched carefully as the others sat back and considered that. His father, Charles, had been right. Distrust would spread through these guys like a fire through a dry grass field.
I'll look into it, Robert said at last. My sister is dating his son. I can use that as an excuse to go over and look around.
Okay, Gary said, and nodded. He'd be sure to let his father know that they'd taken the bait, and to arrange things accordingly. Consequences. Sean yawned and tried to keep his eyes open as they left the guild. Roberta had lent them her minivan, and Dalen was driving, as usual.
You know, if you didn't run off in the middle of the night to abuse Roberta, you wouldn't be tired now,
Roxy snickered.
I also wouldn't be tired if you hadn't decided you needed a little abuse yourself, Sean said, and yawned again.
Hey, I'm entitled. Seen your wife, remember?
Uh-huh. And what's everyone else's excuse?
I don't need one. I own you,
Dalen laughed.
Oh, please, like the word no is even in your vocabulary,
Jolene snickered.
Well, I seem to recall certain people agreeing to loan me out, without my consent, mind you, to a certain lady in return for a place to stay,
Sean responded.
And you went kicking and screaming all the way, Dalen snorted. More like humping and roaring,
Roxy laughed.
Really, hon, you're going to have to do a lot better than that if you want us to think you were at all upset with it,
Jolene chimed in. Sean sighed. All was right in the world.
So, shall we check out the shelter first and see if either of the cars survived?
He asked, changing the subject.
Sure,
Dalen said.
It's almost lunchtime. Wouldn't do to show up while everyone at the factory is on their break anyway.
Sean nodded.
Then let's do that. But let's drive up and down the road a few times first, just to be sure that no one's watching the place.
They all think you're dead, I'm sure, Oak said from the back. I doubt they're keeping an eye on it now, especially with one less team.
Still, it pays to be safe,
Roxy said. They drove back and forth down South Virginia several times, but they didn't see anything, or sense anything magical.
Well, let's do this,
Dalen said, and pulling off the road, she drove down the side road into the drainage tunnel.
Let's go see what's left of my car.
Sean nodded and didn't say anything, just drawing his pistol and getting out of the minivan as soon as Dalen stopped. Oak had opened the back door and already jumped out, his gun in his hand as well.
I'll keep an eye on the entrance,
Roxy said, moving back towards the end they'd come in from, also with a gun in hand.
I'll just wait here,
Jolene said.
I really don't feel like seeing any dead bodies today.
Okay, Sean said, and followed Dalen over to the hidden switch for the garage. When she triggered it, it just popped open, like when they'd first come here.
Power's out. But that's to be expected,
she commented. Sean bent over and, grabbing the edge of the door, he pushed it up.
Ugh, what's that smell?
Dalen asked, gagging as a foul odor floated out.
Burned human, Oak said.
Ugh, I don't know what's worse, the smell or the fact that you knew what it was.
Joe, could you cast a light spell in here, please?
Sean asked.
One moment.
Jolene grumbled, holding her nose with one hand.
Boy, does that stink.
And with the other hand, she cast a spell, lighting up the whole of the garage area. Oak immediately made a beeline for the dead body of his packmate, kneeling down and bending over to check his body.
They killed him, Oak growled. He did his job, served them faithfully, and they killed him.
Oak closed his eyes a moment, in obvious anguish.
What was his job?
Dalen asked.
To grab Sean's book, and then bring it up here to Jameson, then escort Jameson back to Wilston and Hoyce in the van.
Is this Jameson? Sean asked, walking over to the other dead body. Whoever it was, they were burned to a crisp.
Yes,
Oak nodded, looking over at the body.
He was the only one wearing body armor.
Guess there must have been an argument over something. Sean said, looking over the charred remains.
Turning, he looked over at Dalen, who had opened the door to her CUDA.
How's the car, Day?
She's fine,
Dalen said happily.
Oh, I'll have to deal with the scorch marks from where Mr. Human Torch was standing when he got hit, and do something about the smell. But I bet she starts right up.
Dalen hopped in, and sure enough, a moment later, the CUDA started up without a problem.
What about the van? It looks fine from here, Dalen called as she shut the CUDA off.
Well, that's something, Sean sighed, and getting up, he went over to the metal door that led down inside. Putting his hand on it, he noticed that it felt a little warm, but not hot.
I'm going to go down inside, see what survived the heat.
You sure you want to do that, Sean?
Dalen said.
There's 4 bodies down inside there that got poached. I doubt it's going to smell all that good.
I'll be okay, Sean sighed.
Is it possible to get power going down there again?
Sure. Just close the valves by the door and give them 10 or 20 minutes to reset, then open them again.
But I don't know why you'd want to. It's going to be a mess down there. The steam will have melted or cooked everything.
Sean nodded. I know, but I need to check something.
Well, let me move the CUDA out of here. It's already smelly enough.
Can I go with you?
Oak asked Sean as Dalen started the CUDA back up and slowly backed it out of the garage over to where she'd parked Roberta's minivan.
If you want to, Sean told him.
They were my pack. I would like to see them treated a little better than left to rot down there.
Sean nodded. Then, grabbing the latch, he turned it and pushed the door open. The scent that hit him in the face almost made him puke. He had to fight with his stomach a couple of times to keep from retching.
I hate that smell,
Oak growled.
What is it?
Charred fur.
Sean nodded, and pulling out his flashlight, he turned it on and made his way carefully down the stairs. Everything was wet and slimy, as well as warm. With the place sealed up, obviously the moisture from the steam as it condensed had no place to go. When they got to the main room, sure enough, all of the pillows and pads they'd brought down had been destroyed. Going into the kitchen, he looked at the box on the table. It was metal, so it had survived. So had the bracelets and tags inside of it. Picking up the box, he dumped it out onto the table and felt along the bottom. There was a sticky substance there, which probably had once been tape. Turning his light back to the pile of necklaces and tags, it didn't take him long to find it. A small token, made of gold and still sticky from the melted tape, was in the pile. Picking it up, Sean could feel the magic on it now that he was holding it. It was a fairly simple magical beacon. Calling up his enchanting program, he tarballed it first, and then erased it. Slipping it in his pocket, he swept all of the necklaces and tags back into the box and went over to the panel with the 2 water valves. Setting the box down, he opened the panel and spun both of the valves closed. Then, picking the box back up, he carried it up into the garage and set it down by the minivan. Then, he went back down inside to look for Oak. He found him down on the lower level, looking at the cooked remains of his last packmate. Sean had seen the cooked chunks by the table in the living area, obviously from the one he'd frozen, and then 2 more dead bodies in the hallway.
I want to bury them, Oak said, looking up at Sean.
Sean nodded.
Do you want any help?
Oak shook his head.
No, I can handle it. I owe it to them. I was their leader.
Reaching into his pocket, Sean pulled out a wad of bills and handed them to Oak. The keys are in the van up above. I'd say go and buy some blankets to roll them up in first and some heavy plastic bags as well. Maybe a few shovels too. Are you going to take care of Jameson as well?
Oak nodded. They killed him too, possibly because of us. I'll bury him with my pack.
Sean nodded. Meet us back at the guild when you're done.
Thank you, Sean.
It's never easy losing family.
Sean sighed and patted Oak on the back, and then headed back upstairs. He opened the valves back up when he got there. With any luck, Oak wouldn't have to rely on just a flashlight in his night vision for too long.
Where's Oak?
Roxy asked as Sean came out of the garage. He wanted to bury his pack mates, so I told him he could. He'll catch up with us at the guild later.
We taking both cars to the factory?
Dalen asked. Sean picked up the box of necklaces and set it in the back of Roberta's minivan. He looked around at the girls.
If it's all the same to you, Jolene said, I'd rather miss what's going to happen next. I can take the car back to the guild and check in with some of my sources along the way.
Sean nodded and closed the back door, then went over and gave Jolene a hug and a kiss. Just be careful and keep out of trouble.
I always keep out of trouble,
Jolene smiled. I don't know. You took up with me, didn't you? Sean winked.
Yes, and now I know better.
Jolene waved to Roxy and Dalen.
See you back at the guild.
Well, here we are,
Dalen sighed. She knew that someone was going to die, and if Sean didn't kill them, she sure as hell would. Dwarves don't betray other dwarves, and even if Sean wasn't one, he was her husband, and she sure as hell was. Sean reached over and patted her on the leg. Time to see who runs.
Yeah,
Dalen shook her head and grumbled, but I still don't have to like it. Trust me, I'm going to be liking it even less than you, Sean told her. I don't like having to do these kinds of things, as much as they have to be done. Dalen nodded, and opening up the doors, they got out of the car, Dalen taking a moment to pull her hammer out of her handbag. She then led the others into the plant. Everyone inside was busy working as they walked by. Just another dwarf leading a couple of humans towards the engineering office. Nothing that they hadn't seen before, she was sure. That probably would be changing rather soon.
Dalen! What a player!
Garth's voice tapered off as Sean came into the room and shifted immediately into his hybrid form, the top of his mane actually brushing against the office's ceiling.
What is this about?
Garth asked, noticing the look on both Dalen's face as well as the one on the face of the Lionware, who he guessed must be Sean, her husband.
Someone sold us out to the Council of Gradatin,
Dalen stated rather bluntly, smacking her hammer into her hand.
What?
Garth looked stunned.
What happened?
They raided us two nights ago after we brought back the samples from your office, Sean said slowly, growling just a little. Earth and stone, Garth exclaimed. Was anyone hurt?
Not of ours,
Dalen said and smacked the hammer in her palm again.
Well, thank the gods for that. But what does that have to do with me or mine?
Someone, probably someone in this office, Sean growled again, and looked at the three other dwarves who were currently in the office, sitting at drafting tables and following the conversation with wide-eyed apprehension. Put a tracking device in with the samples. Roger McConnell gave it to them.
Dalen nodded and pointed her hammer at Garth.
Does that name ring any bells?
Garth's eyes got wide, and then they slowly started to narrow as he turned to look at one of the three dwarves in the room.
Tarl? Who boxed up that sample?
One of the dwarves jumped in his seat.
Branf did. In fact, he insisted on taking care of it himself. Said it was for a special customer.
Did anyone else know who it was for?
Dalen asked, smacking her hammer into her palm again.
I didn't,
Tarl said, shaking his head.
Not until just now.
Garth shook his head and then turned to look at Dalen.
Only Branf was in the room when you ordered it. Most everyone else was out to lunch. I don't think there's any way that anyone could have guessed. But if he's the one who boxed it up...
Garth shook his head, looking about as angry as Sean did now.
Where is he? Sean growled.
Out on the floor. He's running the stockroom today. The usual guy is out this week.
What do you say we go pay him a visit? Sean growled.
Now wait a moment, You can't just go killing him out of hand, Garth protested. You need proof.
Oh, I have proof, Sean replied. You can trust me on that.
They all trooped out of the office then, Garth in the lead, followed by Dalen, Sean, and Roxy, with the other three dwarves following behind. As both Sean and Roxy were in hybrid form now, they definitely drew a lot of eyes. Garth led them across the factory floor and through a large doorway into the stockroom. A strongly built middle-aged dwarf looked up at them as they came into the room. Sean thought he caught a brief look of fear, but that was it.
"What do you want, Garth? I'm busy," Bramf said a little gruffly. "It seems that someone put something in that sample box that led a number of folks to the place where my cousin and her family were staying," Garth said gruffly, while staring at Bramf. "A number of folks from one of the caster's councils, specifically one of the caster councils that no dwarf should be doing business with."
"Why, I'm offended that ye'd even consider me to have done such a thing," Bramf said, rather hotly. "And ye damn well better have some proof before leveling such accusations against me. My cousin's be on the council here, after all."
"Son," Garth asked, turning to look at Sean. "You put a magical tracking device in the box when you packed it," Sean growled.
"Yeah? Well, where is it? I don't see no device, you overgrown moggy."
Reaching into his pocket, Sean grabbed the gold coin. But then, remembering a trick Chad had once played on him, he grabbed the brass casino token that was still in his pocket instead, and tossed it on the table before Bramf. Sean noticed Bramf tensing up, but as the brass token hit the table in front of him, the dwarf gave a sigh of relief and almost smiled.
"I ain't never seen that before, nor did I put that in any box of yours," Bramf said loudly. "And I'll swear it before the soothsayers of the Earth and Stone Temple right now."
Sean smiled. "Gotcha," he thought to himself. And digging out the gold token that had been used, he said,
"Then I guess you wouldn't mind swearing the same about this as well?"
And he placed the token down on the table before Bramf. Sean had to admit that he'd never seen a dwarf jump up and run that fast. He got about halfway to the back door when Dalen's hammer hit him in the back of the head, and he dropped like a sack of potatoes.
"That was a devious thing, son. I thought lions didn't pull those kinds of tricks," Garth said to Sean.
"You can't trick an honest man," Sean growled. "Or dwarf, for that matter."
Garth nodded.
"Reckon you got a point there, son," he said, as they all walked over towards Bramf, who was trying to get to his feet rather slowly, looking a bit dazed when Dalen's hammer hit him again, getting him in the knee this time and causing him to tumble back down once more. From the way he suddenly cried out, Sean suspected that Dalen had thrown it exceptionally hard this time.
"Why do you do it?"
Garth asked, as they stood around the fallen dwarf who was grabbing his knee and swearing.
"She ain't nothing but a freak, a waste of our tunnels, taken up with a beast no less. She's a blight on all of us. I ain't done nothing that..."
Bramf's outburst stopped rather suddenly as a loud boom filled the room, and Bramf's head exploded. Everyone noticed the pistol in Sean's hand at the same moment.
"Why in the hell did you do that?"
Garth yelled.
"Because I didn't want to get any of that filth on my paws," Sean growled as he put his pistol back into the holster.
"He was entitled to a trial."
"He just had one, and he was found guilty. Sentence was carried out immediately," Sean growled back. "He did it. He admitted it. He paid for it. Anyone who doesn't like it can take it up with me."
"Garth," Dalen warned, "if my man hadn't have killed him, I would have. Traitors aren't entitled to no trials. And he sold you out as well as me and mine."
"Still," Garth said, shaking his head, "there'll be a lot of people upset over this."
"Yeah, well, too bad for them," Dalen said hotly. "When my uncle hears what he did and what he said, there'll be a lot more noise than that gun just made."
Sean noticed that Garth shut his mouth then, and looked a tad embarrassed.
You're right about that, lass. Those were some pretty ugly words he had there.
Looking up from the mess on the floor, Garth looked around.
Tarl! Wass! Hannigan! Clean this mess up!
What? Us?
One of them protested.
You're not in the office where you belong, so yeah, you! Now get to work!
Let's go back to my office, Garth sighed. I'm not as young as I used to be. I need a drink.
Good. We can pay off the balance while we're there,
Dalen said.
I don't think I can take your money in good conscience, Garth said, shaking his head.
Why? Wasn't your fault he was a traitorous bastard?
Maybe not, but he still worked for me. Actually, Sean growled, he worked for McConnell. He betrayed you just as he betrayed us. No reason for you to suffer any more for it than having to clean up the mess I made on your floor.
Well, far be it from me to argue with a lion, Garth agreed.
Wise man, Roxy chuckled. Now, how about that drink?
In the Wind.
I've got news, Jolene told them, when they got back to the guild.
What?
Roxy asked as Sean just collapsed into a chair and dragged Dalen into his lap.
What's with him?
Jolene asked, looking at Sean.
He shot that Bramph idiot in the head after he said a bunch of rather nasty stuff.
Glad I missed it,
Jolene nodded.
I'm sorry I had to hear it,
Dalen grumbled, and let Sean pull her closer.
I knew there was some who didn't like me, but that...
Dalen shuddered.
That hurt.
Hence the bullet to the head, Sean growled. No one says that about you and walks away.
Better warn Sawyer, Roxy told Jolene.
Sawyer doesn't mean it, Sean said, and gave Dalen a kiss. It's just his way of keeping folks on their toes. If he doesn't like you, I bet he wouldn't even talk to you.
You may have a point there, Jolene agreed. But we're getting sidetracked here. I stopped by Sawyer's on the way back here. There's trouble in Gradatim.
Couldn't happen to a more deserving bunch, Roxy growled.
Well, Jameson, one of the council members, disappeared.
We know that. We found his body,
Roxy pointed out.
Yes, we did, didn't we?
Jolene smiled.
And I made sure to tell Sawyer that we did. And that he was killed by Wilston and Hoyce.
How do you know that?
I overheard Oak telling Sean who was at the attack.
Ah, okay. How'd he react to that?
He rubbed his hands gleefully and laughed for a full minute.
Jolene paused.
Sean, are you listening?
Sean had unzipped Dalen's coveralls and pushed them down to her waist, and was carefully exploring her upper body with his lips.
I'm listening, he rumbled.
Me too,
Dalen gasped. Jolene looked at Roxy, who shrugged and grinned.
Anyway, Jolene continued, Hoyce died of a heart attack. Suddenly and unexpectedly. Rumors are flying all over the place. Some think that McConnell did it, and some think that his buddy Wilston did it.
Why would Wilston do it?
Sean mumbled between kisses.
Apparently there's some sort of major power play going on between the senior members of the council.
They didn't hand over the book, Sean mumbled.
Quit talking,
Dalen grumbled and whacked Sean on the head. Jolene paused a moment and thought about that.
It would make sense, she agreed. I didn't want to mention the book to Sawyer, so he had no idea why they were there. He jumped to the conclusion that because the attack was a failure, recriminations are flying around, and Wilston's fighting for his survival now.
I wonder what would happen if McConnell found out that Wilston has the book,
Roxy pondered.
Given Hoyce's death, he probably suspects, Jolene said.
Mm-hmm, Sean agreed.
Oh, that felt nice. Do it again,
Dalen giggled.
Roxy winked at Jolene.
We need to go see Chad, right, Sean?
Roxy asked.
Mm-hmm,
Sean agreed again,
and Dalen sighed happily.
Who's a good lion?
Hmm? Who?
Roxy teased as Jolene laughed. Sean growled, and Dalen sighed even louder.
Good lion. Do that again.
Dalen laughed. The things I put up with, Sean grumbled.
Hey!
Dalen whacked him on the top of his head again.
Bad lion. Did I say you could stop?
Sean tried not to feel too embarrassed as both Jolene and Roxy started to laugh loudly. He'd get them, but he'd be sure to take care of Dalen first.
Better? Yep. No teeth. No.
Oh. Sean smiled to himself as Dalen suddenly ground her body against him. Life was good.
So, what's your goal here?
Chad asked as they sat around the table. Sean had just finished telling Chad everything that had happened, as well as what they knew. He'd told Chad about his father's book as well, and the need to get it back, or at least keep it out of the wrong hands.
To wipe out Gradatim, of course,
Roxy growled. Chad shook his head.
No, you do that, and the other councils will band together, and then you'll have a war. We don't want a war. That's not the goal.
Then what is the goal?
Roxy grumbled.
Freeing Lycans.
That's the goal, Sean sighed. Though I need to get my father's book back as well.
Right. Chad nodded.
And obviously this Wilston guy is planning a coup. That other guy's death is either pure dumb luck or the guy in charge. McConnell was his name, right?
They all nodded. McConnell found out and is undercutting Wilston's support.
You don't think it could be Wilston eliminating competition?
Roxy asked. Chad shook his head.
The time to eliminate any competition from your supporters is after you've won, not before.
Then why not kill Wilston?
Because Wilston has the book and McConnell wants it. But perhaps he doesn't know where it is,
Chad said with a smile.
McConnell probably has his spies watching Wilston like a hawk, and even if he does know where Wilston is keeping the book, it probably pays for him to wait.
Why would he wait? Why wouldn't he kill him immediately?
Either he's worried about the potential reaction from the other members of the council, they have recently lost two members, right? Or he's waiting for all of Wilston's supporters to reveal themselves so he can deal with them when the time comes as well.
There is a third issue, Jolene said.
Oh?
Chad raised an eyebrow, looking at her.
The senior council for Gradatim is 9 strong. If they need to circle for any important magic, they need 7 to circle. With 9 people, it makes it easier to get 7 together on short notice. Once Wilston is dead, they'll only have 6 and not be able to circle.
You can't circle with 6? Chad asked.
Jolene shook her head.
A circle has to be a prime number, otherwise it can collapse into a smaller circle, or 2 smaller circles. The effects of that are pretty bad for those not in a circle, or in the smaller of the 2 circles.
Why not use 5 then?
They could, but a circle of 5 isn't very powerful by comparison. Most major councils have larger senior councils so they can circle 11. But for all that they may be big in Reno, the Council of Gradatim isn't as strong magically as you might think. Most of their power comes from their fairly ruthless use of their lichens.
Jolene looked over at Oak, who had been even more quiet than normal since returning from burying his friends.
Sorry, Oak.
Oak sighed. There's no need to apologize for telling the truth, Jolene.
So once McConnell removes Wilston, he'll need to replace him and as many of the other missing members as quickly as possible, correct?
Chad asked. Jolene nodded.
And no doubt Wilston has already lined up who he was going to use, so again, McConnell is waiting for Wilston to play his hand before adding any traitors to his council.
Jolene nodded slowly.
That would make sense.
Oak, Sean said, looking over at him. You grew up with them. Does that sound right to you?
Oak sighed and nodded. There's always a fair amount of backstabbing and other types of skullduggery that goes on. In the kennels, we actually bet on it, though we made sure none of the humans ever heard about it.
What exactly do the lichens do for the council? Chad asked.
Well, the males in the kennels make up the strike teams, and provide security to the leader and any that ask for help. We're also the janitors and laborers. Females work as servants, breeders, and companions for those who want them.
Companions?
Sexual companions, Oak growled.
How many are there, overall?
2 alpha teams, 3 beta teams. Oak paused a moment. 2 beta teams now. Plus a few extras. Some young kids being trained. So about 50 males, 20 females.
That few? Chad looked surprised. How do they prevent inbreeding?
They trade breeding stock, Oak said with obvious distaste, with other Gradatian councils, and with some of the other covens or council members around the world, some of which have more lichens than others.
That sounds horrid,
Dalen gasped.
There are dealers and breeders, mostly in Europe. That profession has not been able to take hold here in the U.S.
What about the other council members? Chad asked. Do they rely on those in the kennels?
Oak shook his head. Each of the houses has their own lichens, and some of the more powerful council members may have 5 or 6. As the local council members enforce the use of the same magical phrase on all of the lichens owned by everyone in the local group, anyone can kill anyone else's lichens. That's the only reason why they're not used in the intra-council fights.
And now the big question. Just how loyal are the lichens?
How do you mean? Oak looked at Chad questioningly.
If the hold over them was to suddenly end, how many would leave and how many would stay?
The beta teams would bolt in an instant, Oak snorted. We're not allowed to have our own women, and we get all the crappy jobs. Most of the women would probably run as well. The alpha teams? Oak shrugged. I don't know. Some of them seem to be pretty committed. But if it's just an act, or they really are, I can't tell. The lead alpha team is pretty spoiled.
What about the household servants?
Oak shrugged. I guess it would depend on how they were treated. Some would stay, some would go. You have to remember, this is all we've ever known. If Sean were to cut me loose tomorrow, I honestly don't know what I would do. It would take me a while to adjust to it, and I was a pack lead. For pack members, they'd be completely lost. Chad nodded slowly.
Okay, so first, we need to get Sean's book back. Second, we need to free your girlfriend.
Chad nodded towards Oak.
Third, we need to free all of the lichens who want to go without getting into a fight with the ones who want to stay.
We can't let any stay,
Sean sighed.
Not with the council, anyway. Maybe with the individual members.
Why not?
Because they'll just breed up or buy more, and we'll be right back where we started from. This is about freeing the slaves.
I see your point, Chad agreed. But what about the ones in private homes?
Oh, we'll free them too. But we need to pull the teeth from the councils first, before we can start going door to door.
You understand what you're getting yourself into, right?
Sean sighed.
Trust me. The only reason I'm not losing sleep over it is because these three barely let me sleep as it is.
Roxy snorted.
Yeah, right.
Sean grinned, and Chad put up his hands.
TMI, okay? Now, how about someone running out and getting us some food? I need to think about this for a while. But it's all going to hinge on striking when either McConnell or Wilston make their move.
I've only got tags enough for 2 more people, Sean said.
I thought you made 5 more.
Yeah, but I gave 1 to Roxy and 2 to Oak, so he'd have 1 for his girlfriend.
Let me think. And someone go get some food.
Okay, Chad said after they'd finished eating. Chad had been writing stuff down while eating and hadn't said a word.
There are a lot of problems here. The biggest one is not killing anybody.
I'm not sure I can agree to that, Sean sighed. I don't think they're going to just let us waltz in, recover my book, free their lichens, and leave.
That's why it's a problem, Chad said. Especially when removing this McConnell person will cause enough chaos and other problems that it will help you. Of course, if you're lucky, Wilston and he might take each other out. But the first thing you need to do is be ready to move at a moment's notice. When those two have their big confrontation, I bet it will be on McConnell's terms, and that he'll have the book right there to rub it in Wilston's face when he kills him. That'll be the time for you to strike and get your book back. While you're doing that, Oak and Roxy infiltrate the kennels and start freeing the betas and the females. What about the alphas? If you free their women first, I have no doubt that the males will all fall in line. That sound about right, Oak? Chad asked, turning towards him.
For most of them, yeah, Oak agreed. But how are we supposed to free them? They're all pilled. And there are wards all around the kennels that will pop your pill if you leave any way other than the one exit.
How long does one of those tags take to neutralize the silver in a pill? Chad asked Sean, turning back to him. 1, maybe 2 seconds, Sean said. But that's not the problem. It messes up the lichen because it's inside him. They're gonna go down for a minute, maybe longer. I don't know, because I've never actually put one on a lichen with a pill in them. If you can swap tags every 10 seconds with 2 tags, you can deal with 70 people in about 6 minutes, Chad said. Figure 10, because I'm sure there'll be issues once you get started.
We'll need more collars, Sean said.
I thought you had 15 extras?
Collars are harder to switch.
But you have more of them, so you can afford to take more time, Chad pointed out.
I suppose. Now the hard part. Getting in, Sean said.
Right, getting in. How many allies do you have?
None, Sean sighed.
That's not exactly true, dear, Roxy spoke up. How many do you need, and what do you need them for?
Huh? Sean said. Well, Chad said, leaning back in his chair. 15 at a bare minimum. 25 would be a lot better. A show of force in the kennels will back a lot of problems down right from the start. I'm sure they'll listen to Oak. He was one of them, after all. But you need to shut the others down so he can speak before they get started. You'll need another smaller and more skilled team to go with Sean, to keep anyone from doing anything stupid, while he gets his book back. Not too many people, but enough that most folks will be thinking of running rather than standing and fighting.
Okay,
Roxy said, and pulling out her cell phone, she put the battery in it and turned it on.
Roxy?
Sean asked.
Yes.
What are you doing?
Calling Daddy, of course.
Roxy grinned at him as Daylin got out her phone as well.
Why? 'Cause I ran into him back at Daylin's last week, and he told me he was the head of the Lycan Fellowship now, and to call when I needed help. Well, sounds like we need help, don't we?
Sean said, and then looked at Daylin. And you?
I'm calling my uncle. You're family now, hon. That counts for something. Hello, Daddy?
Roxy said.
Do you think you could meet us at Sawyer's in, say, an hour? Thanks, Dad.
Sean looked at Daylin as she had the same short conversation with Samus.
Wow, looks like I finally get to meet the infamous Sawyer, Chad chuckled.
I'm not sure that's a good idea, Sean warned.
Of course it's not a good idea, Chad laughed. But I bet you can't think of a better one. Let's go.
Sawyer's Antiquities. It was after 10 when they got to Sawyer's, using the back door he had told them to use the last time Sean had been there. Marks met them at the door and escorted them into the same conference room they'd been in before, and then left. Sawyer was conspicuous by his absence, but as Roxy's father, Bill Channing was there. Sean wasn't too surprised. Roxy ran over and hugged her father, as Daylin did the same to her Uncle Samus.
So, what's this all about then? Bill said, looking at Sean. And who are your friends?
This is Oak, Sean said, who was a Gradatim Lycan up until a few days ago. He's mine now.
Oak nodded to Bill and Samus.
This is Chad. He's human, and he's one of my best friends, and possibly the best tactician and strategist in the state.
Bill and Samus both eyed Chad, who just smiled and gave a little wave, looking not at all worried.
As for why we're here, well, Gradatim got their hands on my father's book when they attacked us 2 nights ago. I don't think they can get past its protections, but trust me when I say that we don't want to give them the chance.
Why not?
Sean sighed.
I don't even want to give you a hint as to what's in that book. Once I've finished committing it to memory, I may just destroy it myself. But I need it to build more of these. And Sean tossed the two silver tags onto the table. I almost killed myself making those.
So that's what all the fuss is about?
Samus said, picking up one and looking at it. Yep, that's it. And I know how to make more of them, but I need that book also. Sean smiled. I promised Oak I'd free his girlfriend, and I figured as long as I'm getting my book back and we're freeing her, we might as well free everyone. But if I don't want it turning into a bloodbath, and if I don't want everyone finding out about it, I need help. Sean spread his hands. So, can you help me? Bill pulled out a chair and sat down.
What's your plan?
Sean turned to Chad.
That's your cue, Chad.
Chad smiled and walked over to the rather large whiteboard that dominated one of the walls.
Okay, thanks to Google Maps and what Oak told me earlier, I have a pretty fair understanding of the lay of the land.
Sean watched as Chad started to quickly sketch out the main Gradatim compound where they had their kennels and where McConnell lived.
So, this is what I was thinking.
It took Chad 2 hours to detail all of the aspects of his plan, and then he spent another hour asking both Bill and Samus about their people, their capabilities, as well as their limitations. Sean hadn't seen Chad look so happy in years, and both Bill and Samus were suitably impressed. They then called Sawyer into the room and had Chad explain the highlights of the plan to him, without mentioning Sean's book, of course. Chad then told Sawyer what they'd need in the way of intelligence up front. When Sawyer called Chad a gimpy, unwashed human, Chad just smiled and asked how much he had to pay the goblin girls to get by that stench he called an aftershave. That was followed by a 10-minute-long insult war, which only ended when one of Chad's more involved insults caused Sawyer to crack a smile.
You're okay for a human,
Sawyer finally declared, then turned to Bill.
Why don't you just have one of your cop friends spy on the place, Channing?
Because too many of them are human, and the ones that aren't would have to explain what they're doing over there. Besides, no one snoops like a goblin.
Yep, no one does, Sawyer grinned. So, what's in it for me?
How about?
Bill stopped as Sean raised his hand.
What do you want, Sawyer?
What's so important that you're doing this?
Sean smiled. If I tell you, I will immediately kill you. Do you really want to know that badly? Sawyer sighed.
The trouble with you, kid, is that I can actually tell when you're not joking. Okay, rumor has it that McConnell has a Durnax tooth.
Durnax tooth? What's that?
It looks almost exactly like this.
Sawyer reached into his pocket and pulled out a small green-colored knife and set it on the table. The knife, handle and all, was maybe 4 inches long, and it was curved, not unlike a claw or a beast's fang. The hilt was a little more than half of its length, and the color of it nearly matched Sawyer's skin.
Any idea where I can find it? Sean asked.
Most likely it'll be on him. If not, check his bedroom, particularly the nightstand next to it.
What is it? Other than a knife, that is.
An important goblin magical item. I'd tell you more, but then I'd have to kill ya.
Sawyer laughed. Sean nodded.
Fair enough.
Now, let me call some folks, and I'll see what we can learn.
Samus got up as Sawyer left the room.
I need to get my people organized. I'll call once we're ready.
That's my cue, Bill said, standing up as well. I'll have my people at the staging point before sunrise.
I doubt anything is going to happen that early in the morning, Chad said.
No, but I'd rather be ready too early than too late.
Good point.
Head to head. Sam Wilson smiled at everyone as he walked into the meeting room. They'd all just returned from Hoyce's funeral, and several of the other council members had suggested meeting to start going over the list of new members.
As several of those now likely to be considered were already firmly in Sam's pocket, he was more than happy with the idea.